The following program is presented by the Far East Broadcasting Company because stories of people living out the gospel with their lives inspire all of us. FEBC, taking Christ to the world through radio and new media. Learn more at febc.org.
No one has an exclusive on being abusive. It can happen to any of us, depending upon, you know, the emotional wounds and hurts that we experience in life that can personify themselves in hurting others later.
From Villain to Hero describes our guest coming up now on First Person. I'm Wayne Shepherd, and we'll meet Michael Clark, not his real name, who is leading an effort to help perpetrators of domestic violence find healing. More about Michael and his own inner battle as you listen to the upcoming conversation. Thank you for joining us each week. We're here to tell the stories of people whose lives have been radically changed by Jesus Christ, people who now serve the Lord with their lives in a variety of ways. To review past interviews, please visit firstpersoninterview.com, where you can stream our past programs, or download our free smartphone app. Search for First Person Interview in your app store. Michael Clark is an ex-abuser jailed twice for domestic violence. His life has been turned around through his relationship with the Lord, and he is the founder of the Ananias Foundation, which encourages churches to engage in the fight against domestic violence. We'll have additional information at firstpersoninterview.com. Michael is now helping others find the same healing he has found. But Michael Clark is not his real name, and I ask him why he chooses to use a pseudonym.
It's a good question. There is a lot of shame and stigma that's associated with domestic violence. And so one of the reasons why I chose to use a pseudonym is just so that shame and stigma did not transfer over to my loved ones, to my family. It also sends a message to people that come to us for help that we don't care who you are. It's not about identifying you. And if it feels safer to do so with using a different name, as we often have people do, then that's fine. We don't care. It's not about identifying you. And if that helps us lower the barrier for someone getting help, then we've done our job well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. This is not a happy topic to have to address, but it's the reality, isn't it? And you know that all too well. You have such a personal story. Thank you for being willing to share it with us here today.
Yes, you're welcome. It's a topic that, you're right, isn't a happy topic, but is all too prevalent at any given time. Statistics show that about 4% of relationships have some sort of abuse or violence going on. And so it actually is much more prevalent than I think people realize.
Yeah. Well, tell me your personal story. What happened?
Yeah, so 15 years ago, I was arrested twice for domestic violence, acts that I committed against my wife. And I knew at the time that this was wrong. I knew it was not the person that I wanted to be. And yet I would find myself in those situations where we'd have a conflict, it would escalate, and I would end up saying or doing something that I really regretted. And so I set out on a journey to try to figure that out, because as you can imagine, the legal trouble and the relationship trouble that caused me were going to absolutely ruin my life. And so I wanted to figure out, why am I doing this? And importantly, what do I need to do to stop?
Yeah.
And so it was really my journey of discovery. And then as I was going through that, I had this idea that maybe if I figure this out, or when I figure this out, I can reach back and help others who are like me in that position of hurting someone that they love, but wanting to change.
Mm-hmm. Were you a Christ follower when this incident happened?
You know, I really wasn't. I grew up going to church off and on. It was something that wasn't important to me. And quite honestly, I had fallen away from going to church and really didn't have an active relationship with the church. And I certainly didn't have a personal relationship with Christ at that time. It was religion. It was attending church, but it wasn't personal for me.
Yeah.
And so that was really one of the transformative elements of my change, was to discover and to get that personal relationship with Christ.
Well, we can talk more about that as the story unfolds here.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's a pretty serious charge, domestic violence. What happened? What were the consequences?
Well, so I was arrested and went to jail twice for two different incidents. In that time, my wife moved out, and so we were separated. There was a order of protection or a restraining order, as it's called, so that I couldn't see her. And so I was really, you know, highly motivated to try to figure this out, partly because I wanted to save my marriage. And I certainly didn't want to be in more trouble, but more that I just didn't feel good about myself. And, you know, you person starts to wonder, what's wrong with me? Is there something fundamentally flawed? Is it permanently flawed? And so those were the questions that I had going through my mind at the time.
Okay. So what were the first steps? How did you find your way out of this? What was the turnaround moment for you?
You know, really the turnaround moment was probably hitting rock bottom and getting that motivation. And so I started doing a lot of research, reading everything I could on the internet, trying to find books that were helpful. I also had the good fortune of my wife and I were seeing a counselor at the time. And when he heard that there was domestic violence involved, he just started seeing me separately, which is somewhat typical in domestic violence cases. So working with the counselor, he did a really good job of helping me discover that the situations I was reacting to were situations that were triggering this deep-seated, unanswered question of, am I lovable? Am I worthwhile? And I could go back and whether it was being criticized or abandoned or, you know, any of those situations where I felt less than, it really got to that core issue of, am I lovable? And unfortunately, I didn't have a good answer for that. But at also somewhat serendipitously at that time, my wife, who I wasn't able to see, said, if you want to see me, you can see me in church. And so I, not very pure motivation for going to church, but I wanted to see my wife that I was not able to see the rest of the week. And so I would sneak into the back and sit with her to see her. And at that same time, then that message that God loves me, the creator of the earth, and all of the universe loves me, started to answer that deep-seated question that was unanswered. Mm-hmm. And so once we know that, we're less concerned about what other people think, about their criticisms, about whether they're with us or not with us. And it really answered the deep questions, which allowed me to change the behavior.
Yeah. Well, talk to me about how she as a victim dealt with this and what was the process for her?
That probably is a better question for her than for me. We worked for 6 years trying to reconcile our relationship. At the end of the day, sadly, we were never able to. And so there's certainly some pain and some forgiveness that has to go on for that relationship to be restored. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. And in my case, it doesn't. Now, I have the good fortune from that time of moving on, meeting a wonderful woman, and have a terrific relationship and marriage now that I'm in, and one that's safe and abuse-free. Mm-hmm. We still have conflict, but it's the normal run-of-the-mill kinds of conflicts that doesn't escalate, and we're able to resolve that.
Your healing process, it was spiritual, of course. What's it like for most people? Do most abusers come to a point where they change as dramatically as you changed, Michael?
You know, it's all over the board. One of the things that holds people back is what I ran into when I was looking at why am I doing this and how do I change? And there's a lot of misinformation out there that says abusers can't change. And that's very discouraging. So many people run into that and it's like, well, this is just who I am. And there's nothing that I can do. And so I'll try to accommodate. Again, there's a lot of stigma and shame. And so a lot of times people don't go to seek help because that is a very vulnerable position to be in. And but I think for people who know that change is possible and know that there's a process and take that brave step, that they certainly can find that. And so, you know, one of the things that the organization I started, the Ananias Foundation, does is try to point to people to the resources and the processes which will make a difference in their change. Hmm.
Did you find it hard to convince people that you had changed?
Yes, absolutely. We have this belief pervasively in society that abusers can't change. And I think it's reasonable. A lot of us like to say, hey, I'm better now, I'm better, and we really aren't better. It's a very slow incremental process. So it's really easy to look at me, even knowing me today, and know that I'm not perfect. And so what degree of imperfection, you know, do we say is evidence that we haven't changed? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think people are very naturally reluctant. Has this person changed, and is this person safe? And that's a really good question and a very fair question. One of the things that really helped for me is to stop worrying about whether they thought I had changed or not, and just know that that was something that was important for me to know about myself and for God to know about me, and not really care as much about what other people thought. And that was very freeing change of mind.
More about this former domestic violence abuser, Michael Clark, and his story coming up in a moment.
I'm so grateful for the grace I receive while listening to FBC all day long. I cried listening to God's message multiple times.
The Far East Broadcasting Company receives millions of responses each year from grateful listeners. FEBC is dedicated to taking Christ to the world through radio and new media. To learn more, please visit febc.org. That's febc.org. The Far East Broadcasting Company, until all have heard.
My guest is Michael Clark of the Ananias Foundation. Tell me about the foundation. When did this come into existence, and what is its purpose, Michael?
Yes. So, as I mentioned earlier, as I was going through my change process, the thought occurred to me, probably a God-inspired thought, hey, if I can ever figure this out, maybe I can help somebody else. And so that was part of my motivation. And I had that calling in the back of my mind for years. As you know, it was 15 years ago that I was arrested, and I didn't really do anything with that. It was just in the back of my mind. And so God orchestrated circumstances in my life that I had some free time, an abundance of free time, and really felt that calling again that now is the time. So 3.5 years ago, not quite 4 years ago, decided to figure out how can I help, you know, others. And so really looked at a variety of different ways of, you know, is it writing a blog or writing a book, which I did, or is it an organization, or is it volunteering for another organization? And really felt that the best way that I could help others is through an organization. We call it the Ananias Foundation, and provide resources, guidance, direction that will help people who are looking to stop harming the ones that they love.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things you've learned? For instance, I know that domestic violence is prevalent in all classes of society, if you will. It's also present in the church, sadly. What have you discovered about that?
This is a human issue. And I think when we start to think about the causes of what causes people to hurt others, hurt people hurt others. And none of us are immune from being hurt. In our childhood, in our peer groups, none of us grow up and escape the natural traumas and hurts that come with life. And so you're right. It's rich, it's poor, it's all gender, you know, all classes, all races, you know, both genders. So no one has an exclusive on being abusive, and no one gets a pass on, well, that doesn't apply to me. It can happen to any of us, depending upon you know, the emotional wounds and hurts that we experience in life that can personify themselves in hurting others later.
Yeah.
And so that's been part of my journey and learning in this organization, is just understanding how pervasive this is and how there is no stereotype that we can say, oh, that person, you know, is an abuser, or that person couldn't be. Mm-hmm. Everyone could be.
Do you have resources for both the victim and the abuser?
You know, we really focus on someone who is causing harm, that's trying to change. There are a lot of good resources out there, hotlines, shelters, counseling for victims. And so we really thought that the niche that we could fill best is helping the person that was causing harm. Plus, of course, that was my background. And so that was sort of the natural.
But the last person is going to come to you for the help, right? I mean, the victim knows that there's a problem. The abuser, who's the perpetrator here, doesn't really maybe sometimes want to deal with the issue?
It could go both ways. We certainly have a lot of people who are victims who do research and find us on the internet, and then they share it with their partner. And so we certainly have people that come to us that way. But there is a surprising amount of motivation for those of us, like I found, that, you know, we know what we're doing is wrong. We know that it's either getting us in legal trouble or damaging our relationships. And at some point, you realize this is not working for me, and it's probably not normal or natural. And so what can I do? And so I think there's actually more motivation than people realize out there, that there's this natural motivation. Hmm.
Do you work at all with law enforcement and the courts?
We don't specifically work with law enforcement and the courts. All the states have a mandated domestic violence intervention program that they go to. That program is one that I went through that I honestly didn't find very helpful. And the reason is that it assumes that we men do it because we think we're entitled to, you know, boss our wife around, and we're superior in some way. Now, that message didn't resonate with me at all. And as I listened to the guys in the room and the stories of what happened in their domestic violence incidents, that didn't seem like that was right either. So we take a very different approach, which is getting to those core emotional wounds that are driving the behavior. And once we heal those wounds and help people address that, then the behavior changes.
Yeah.
So
do you get involved in counseling? Do you have Christian counselors? Do you have staff? How does it work?
Yeah, we don't do counseling per se. We really try to be a gateway. We certainly encourage people who can get counseling to go to counseling.
Do you network with counselors?
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, we love talking to counselors. What we found and the feedback we get from them is that our resources and the groups and the workbooks and so forth that we offer actually supplement what they do when they're working with someone who's working to change. The more different touch points that a person can have in addressing issues, you know, sometimes they're working through something in our guidebook, and then they'll talk to their counselor about that. Or they'll hear something from their counselor, and they'll be in a group, and they'll say, oh my gosh, my counselor was just talking to me about this. Now this makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
So it's really complementary to counseling. For people that aren't in counseling or can't afford counseling, then, you know, we try to provide some of those same ideas for them to work through on their own, or encourage them to go to counseling. And again, to destigmatize counseling as this doesn't mean you're crazy. It means all of us have blind spots and we can benefit from coaching.
For the person who's a victim, what's your advice to them?
My advice is, first of all, you absolutely do not deserve to be hurt or harmed. And so please know that. And then secondly, that when you're in that situation, it is absolutely appropriate to set some boundaries around that. Now, that might mean for some, if it's safe for you to do that, talk to the person that's causing harm and say, this is not okay, and enforce that boundary, kind of a tough love thing. If that's not safe for you to do, it's absolutely appropriate for you to remove yourself from that situation, get someplace safe, and really, in doing so, that's the kindest, most loving thing that you can do if it motivates that other person to examine what's going on with them. You can be that catalyst that they will discover healing that will not only help your relationship or the next relationship that they're in, but help their relationships with kids and family members and coworkers and neighbors, and just feel better about themselves. So tough love is a difficult thing to do, to set those boundaries and create natural consequences, but it's really important that you do that.
And then for the person who's where you were 15 years ago, maybe they want to change, maybe they're not there yet. If they're listening, what do you say to them?
A couple of things. First of all, that change is possible. And secondly, when you discover the hurts that are behind this bad behavior, that's hurting you and your relationships, and you heal some of that hurt, you'll absolutely feel better about yourself. Your relationships will be better. Your life will be better. And so, yes, absolutely know that not only is change possible, but there's a process. There are other people that have gone through this, that have made those changes, and you can do it too.
In your case, the new was a dramatic change, a very dramatic change.
Yes. And that's one thing that, you know, it took a while in the moment. You know, of course, we all want people to say, wow, you know, Michael, I really see a big change in you. And I didn't get that feedback, but I started to realize it myself. And the people that knew me then and know me now, I think my children, who are now young adults, reflect this best. They're like, wow, Dad, yeah, we remember the old version. And, you know, they're just really, they're proud of me. And, you know, that's really one of the best things that I've been able to give them, not only a better relationship with them, but also knowing that no matter what they get up against, whatever they discover about themselves, that they can work on it. It doesn't have to be a permanent scar.
It was true in Michael's life that his sin of abuse was overcome through the power of Jesus Christ, and he now points others to that same source of strength and hope for change. Michael Clark is the author of From Villain to Hero, and we'll put links leading to more information and a link to the Ananias Foundation at firstpersoninterview.com. Bringing you these weekly interviews is made possible by the support of the Far East Broadcasting Company. Why? Because stories of lives changed by Christ are celebrated by all of us, and FEBC wants you to rejoice at the stories of people turning to Christ wherever FEBC's programs are heard. On the website, febc.org, you'll find inspiring stories of people in far corners of the world. Go to febc.org. Now, with thanks to my friend and producer, Joe Carlson, I'm Wayne Shepherd. Join us next time for First Person.